Welcome to this special show on Thursday. We're bringing you Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, that's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and yes, on a Thursday again. We, you know, sometimes we do the Mondays, the Wednesdays, the Fridays, and Ray and Tay are versatile. We'll throw you some Thursdays. So listen, you want to join the fun, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Hit us up at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. We love your questions, talking about NFL minicamps, the NBA combine, NBA playoffs, hockey, whatever it is. And check all that stuff on our site, rayandtaytoday.com. We've got the NBA playoff tree, baseball, our fantasy baseball league, a whole bunch of stuff. You know, Tay's putting it on Ray. Tay steals home, baby, against Ray's hitting hard.
Long
so we have our little battle,
long seat.
Right? We have our little battles. But also, check us out on Twitter. You know, we've been loving it. A lot of great conversations on Twitter. Follow us at Ray and Tay Today Twitter and like us on Facebook. And Ray, let them know we got a special guest today.
Yes, we do. So we'll take you around breaking news in the world of sports like we always do. And then we'll jump right in to our special guest, Charles Davis of Fox and the NFL Network. So he is our college football and pro football guy. The guy worked the NFL draft for the NFL Network.
He's a guru.
He covers college sports with Fox, and he's a Tennessee alum. And we'll get into some of his thoughts around what happened in the draft, the world of college football, all the mock drafts leading up to the draft, and how he thinks the mini camps and pro football are going. So a lot of good football talk from Charles Davis, and he's a very knowledgeable guy, but he goes deeper than just the game. I mean, if you can check out his website, maybe he'll talk about it a little bit. He's got a lot to say, and so we hope you'll enjoy that segment.
Yeah, CharlesDavisSports.com. It's a great site.
Absolutely. And then we'll continue wrapping up the NFL, and then we'll transition into the NBA. Wow, we got some NBA playoffs in full.
It's over.
Effect. We've got some teams that are in trouble. We've got some teams that blew through the playoffs, and we got a couple in between also. So very interesting playoffs happening so far. So we'll go through a pretty deep look at the NBA playoffs, and then we'll finish up with a quick tour of Major League Baseball. We'll go around the league, tell you who's hurt, who's playing well, who's not playing well, give us some thoughts, give you our thoughts on baseball as we start to enter that second quarter of the season. So a lot of good stuff today. So we'll start it off with some breaking news. So, Tay, tell us what's happening.
Well, listen, man, this is interesting to me, and it looks like the Jaguars picked him up. But Kyle Long, defensive tackle for the Patriots, I don't know if his agent released it or he said it, but he announced that he had type 2 diabetes, but the Patriots cut him. Looks like the Jaguars picked him up, I believe. But it's just an interesting sort of story. Look, we're at a time now where you're going to have a lot of veterans as mini camps are going and then OTAs start, where players are getting cut. Some players are signing late contracts, like Charles Woodson has, you know, gone to Denver, but he left there without a contract. The Raiders have an offer for him. He might meet with the Giants. So all this type of stuff going on and stuff. And, you know, we'll talk to Charles about the draft, but maybe, you know, he'll give us a look at some of the teams and some of their moves. So it's kind of interesting what's going on right now in the NFL. We talked about Buddy Nix retiring, and I don't know, I got to get the guy's name, but we got an African-American GM now in Buffalo. He's from the Pittsburgh family tree. Doug is his first name. What's his last name? Wesley or something like that. So they got a new GM. And,
Whaley.
You know,
Whaley.
Whaley. Whaley, exactly. Whaley, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Doug Whaley. So pretty young guy and, you know, was in the, you know, the whole Pittsburgh camp. So that's kind of interesting in itself. So, you know, we'll see, you know, what's going on at Buffalo, man. They're making some big moves, and maybe it's a fresh start up there for the Bills and all the Bills faithful, because they've had a rough way to go, you know. They've had
a rough
way to go.
Start, you know, you heard about Rolando McClain, the kid from Alabama who
yeah.
played for the Raiders and then signed with the Ravens. You thought that that team and Ozzie Newsome and some of the structure that they have and some of the success that they've had, that he would be able to get a new start, but he decided to retire at 23 to go get his life in order. And look, I can't be mad at somebody trying to get his life in order. So good for him. Good for him that he took his life in his own hands, because this was really leading to a slippery slope. Hopefully he'll get his life together and then he'll come back, because at 23 he still has a lot of football left in him. But first and foremost, you got to get your off the field situation taken care of. But yeah, Rolando McClain, that's an interesting story. A guy from a major school, you know, a top 10 pick, I think he was number 10 overall for Oakland a few years back, and he ends up retiring at age 23.
It's fascinating, and, you know, you feel kind of bad for him because he's having all these legal issues, but maybe, like you're saying, he'll sort of step back and regroup and then come back, you know. And, you know, you hear about all these stories for different players, you know, and even, like, you know, you got Marcus Lattimore there on the injured side, you know, maybe, you know, he gets to sit for a year and then come and play with the Niners and stuff. Also, just so you know, our boy Doc Rivers is returning back to the Celtics.
Glenn.
So I think
you.
Yes, Glenn. Yes, that is Glenn. Ex Nick, ex Hawk, and
ex Marquette Golden Eagle.
Keep it real, and a great coach always. So
played for Al.
Yeah, you know. Listen, a lot of stuff's going on in the NBA. You know, obviously, you know, we'll get into it after Charles, you know, but we congratulate the Heat and the Grizzlies for advancing. But, you know, we also got the NBA draft combine, which I saw some of it today. And I think it's interesting because you've got some of the Europeans and cats like also Oladipo, who their agents
boy.
Are telling them, that, you know, that's my boy. Victor O is what I call him. For those who listen to the show, they remember during the season, that was like, you know, hey, kind of like a man crush. That's my guy, Victor O. But what's interesting, Ray, a lot of guys, him and then also the German player, Schrader, they're not working out because they're getting promises from teams, basically like, hey, I'll take you in the lottery. You're not going to leave the lottery, or you won't leave, you know, by pick 16 or 17. So you sort of see certain players, and then you see the guys like Shane Larkin and Hardaway Jr. and Bullock from North Carolina who are impressing and, you know, playing, you know, some good ball. And I like the kid from Davies from BYU. He was the Portsmouth Invitational MVP. So he, you know, was invited to the combine. Nice power forward, and maybe he'll do okay in the NBA, and, you know, as a real power forward, like, you know, in the trenches. Sort of like our boy Z-Bo.
Yeah, Z-Bo came out, and who knew he'd be this good coming out of Michigan State. I thought he'd be a serviceable role player. Wow, Z-Bo with the old, but I love with the old man game. They got Z-Bo with the old man game.
And you know what's so funny? I mean, yeah, you could say that, but it's so not the case. Ain't nothing old about Z-Bo's game, baby. That's just lunch pail.
Effective.
You know.
But the NBA has changed, so there aren't many Z-Bos out there.
Yeah, no, you're right. And you got to believe if you could be a good post player or a good pure shooter in these, you know, 60 picks of the NBA draft, you're going to get a spot.
All right, let me go get our guest.
All right, you know, so listen, I think the main thing that people need to think about, you know, with that is the NBA draft, you know, these guys are special. There's not too many of them, and it's rare. But, you know, it's the same thing with the NFL. You know, you talk about the NFL draft and how special and rare. I mean, look at the number one pick, right? Eric Fisher from Central Michigan. He went to, you know, the Senior Bowl and just got busy. People fell in love with him, from Pat Kerwin and everyone else. And he became the number one pick.
Hello?
Everyone
Charles.
Thought it would be Luke Joko.
Yes.
Hey, Charles. This is Ray. We're calling from Ray and Tay today.
How are you guys?
All right. How you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Charles.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And my sincere apologies about the mix-up the last time we were supposed to be together. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. It's our pleasure to have you on. And I'm Ray, and my partner on the line is Tay. So,
all right, guys.
Welcome.
Yeah, man. Charles,
thank
listen.
You. Thanks again for
having we're native...
Me.
Native New Yorkers, Ray's still in the city. I'm out here in Scottsdale, so we're covering you from coast to coast. Just want to jump in right off the bat, obviously looking at the draft. Now we've got some mini camps, some OTAs going on the way. We wanted to sort of, for our fan base and just from your expertise, get your feel on how, obviously, the Jets and Giants, also the Cardinals, yeah, and Steelers and Cowboys, those five teams, just sort of focusing on them because we're big Steeler and Cowboy fans growing up. What did you think about their draft and their free agent moves?
Well, who do you want to start with? And before we even start
Let's go with the Jets. Let's go with the Jets, baby. Let's see about Geno Smith and work our way over.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with the Jets. Okay. I like the Jets draft. I did. And I found it interesting because they did some stuff that was a little bit uncharacteristic. And what I mean by that is when the draft was laid out, you know, we all do those mock drafts, which for the most part are exactly what they are, mock.
Absolutely.
Right?
Although Mayock did well, he got 8 right.
He did, listen, he did terrific. I think anybody who gets, he's phenomenal, as we well know. But just trying to put, to me, it's not so much as this guy to this exact team, as much as do you know the guys are going to be in the first round. Who's the pool that you're pulling from? And, and he's going to get that almost every single time. But I go back to the Jets, all right? Let's think about what we were thinking early with them. Before they made the Revis trade and they had the one pick, we were thinking at number 9, somebody off the edge pass rushing guy, right?
Yep.
So Tiki Mingo was kind of the guy we all centered in on. I don't know about you guys, but
no, definitely.
Seen by consensus, right? Mingo kind of because, we liked him better than Jarvis Jones at that point because Jarvis has had that horrible pro day at Georgia. He had that length, and he looked like a guy who could move around, and Rex has taken more of a control of the defense. Well, then Mingo goes off the board at 6 to Cleveland. Like, who's the edge guy that the Jets are going to want at 9 or 13? Then they make the move on Revis, so now there's a screaming need for corner. So 9 and 13, you're thinking there's got to be a corner in there, and the top corners are going to be available. Somebody's going to be there for them. But who do you have for an edge rusher? Do you change now and try and get an offensive guy to help out your offense? Well, getting the kid out of Missouri, Sheldon Richardson, I thought was a beautiful move. And here's why. Richardson is a very, very athletic defensive lineman. And while he's not a Mingo that you're going to stand up off the edge and do more things with, you can move him up and down the defensive front and find your matchups. And I think athletically, he is gifted. Because remember, when this draft started, Sharif Floyd, a defensive tackle from Florida, was the number 1 defensive tackle, remember?
Yep.
Yeah.
Everyone liked him.
And he dropped.
Well, guess what? He fell. Look, Sheldon Richardson became the first defensive lineman off the board, defensive tackle off the board. And there's a reason. When you watch him, he's athletically gifted. So I love that. I love them getting Milner, the corner, at 6. Because, at 9, you had to do that. You had to get someone to help replace Revis. Geno, it's almost like he couldn't help it. He's sitting there. He's falling to him. And you're thinking, we're not sure about Sanchez, right? We're not sure about Sanchez. David Garrard, at worst, at best, is going to give you 1 year. And now, the three of us know that he's not going to be there at all now. You couldn't help it. You do that. An underrated pick to me is Brian Winters, the tackle from Kent State, who I think is play guard. I think he's going to be a big-time mauling type of a guard. We got to see him at the Senior Bowl, and he had a really good week. I think that he's the type of guy that just likes to come in, and, Rex wants to ground and pound at times. Brian Winters fits that. Ode Abushi, the tackle from Virginia, I think he'll kick in the guard, guys. The intriguing one is the defensive lineman from Michigan, William Campbell. Can you make him an offensive lineman? It's been done plenty of times in the league. They may have to redshirt him, so to speak, in NFL parlance, get a year in the practice squad, learn his craft. But he could turn out to be a really nice move. Now, whether that'll be for Rex or for the next guy, that remains to be seen. But I like that move.
Okay. So I agree with, what you're saying with the Jets. And, we want to stay with, in MetLife.
Let me just say one more thing. The only thing missing, was offense.
Yes, exactly.
But let's face it. Some sort of explosive playmaker, right? And Tavon Austin, I think, would have been their pick at 9 if St. Louis doesn't move up to 8 and snatch him.
Exactly.
I think they could have resisted him, guys. At nine,
no,
yeah. The corner you can get.
I love Tavon Austin.
Get at 13.
I think he's a
and
steal.
And Tavon Austin would have been huge. He would have been huge, but they snatched him at eight, and that killed it.
Yeah, just haven't had
but
a
anyway,
playmaker like that in years.
In years. I mean,
yeah.
God rest George Stauer's soul, who we just lost a few days ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, Don Maynard. And go, where's Richard Casper when you need him? I mean, my God, we don't have that kind of guy now.
Definitely. Well, looking at MetLife Stadium, where they share it with the Giants, now I know we're going to get into some of their picks, and I think they do such a great job, and that organization is first class. What rumors are you hearing that they might bring in a Charles Woodson, since he might not take the Raider or the Denver Bronco deal?
Yeah, I've heard that too, and I think that would be a good one for them. Remember, Kenny Phillips isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And a guy who can play on the back end and can be as versatile as Woodson. And here's the thing about the Giants. They're always contenders. So bringing a guy like Woodson who wants to play for a ring, at his stage of his career, you think he wants to go to the rebuilding team? He doesn't have time.
No.
He's be with someone who's going to compete right now, and the Giants are that team. And could you imagine putting him back there with Roll? I think that's a big-time move for them. Plus, you know the chess piece he is. Does he drop in the slot? Does he come off the corner? Does he play safety? The answer is all of the above. And he's smart enough to understand how to play the game. Did he lose a step? Sure, of course. I mean, other than Dara Torres, the swimmer, who among us gets faster as we get older?
Oh, no, let's not go there.
Right? I mean,
so how do you like their draft, though? Do you think that they did the Giants hit sort of a safe double, a lot of safe doubles, solid picks?
Yeah. Good call. I love that. I'm going to go right along with you. A lot of those doubles, and you know you're moving station to station. Look, one double, you hit the second one, that's a run scored, right?
That's
so,
right.
So I like it. See, Justin Pugh, offensive line needed it, okay? Whether it's David Deal upset about, you know, him being drafted, doesn't matter. All right, guys are getting a little long in the tooth there. All right, so you need him, and here's the beauty of him, tackle and guard. I know everybody screams about the 31-inch arms. I get that.
Right.
You know something? I'd leave him out there until he proves he can't play it. Because then if he can't, he's going to be a good guard. Robert Gallery is the comparison, right? Remember the big kid out of Iowa that
drafted as
left tackle?
Number three overall, yeah.
Right? And you remember they paid him left tackle money, and that didn't work? But you know something? His best years in the league, and he was a more than serviceable guard. He just got nailed because he was drafted as a tackle, and when you're drafted to play that money, you need to play like that. Pugh, I think, is a good draft pick. Hankins is a big run stuffer inside. The wild card pick was DeMontre Moore in the third round, guys.
Yep.
Because let's say Jerry Reese gets for a guy who's got two Super Bowl rings as a GM, he gets passed over every time we talk about the best drafters and GMs in the league, and it should not be happening. He always finds
exactly.
A rush to pass or something. All right, what round did they get Justin Tuck?
Was it fourth?
Right, he was like fourth rounder, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think
he was a fourth
yeah.
rounder. But you're getting DeMontre Moore, a college All-American, who prior, when this process started, right, guys, let's just put it on the table. When this process started, was he not looked at as a top five pick when we started the
definitely.
Whole draft process? Right?
Yeah, with that talent and his production.
In the third round. Now you got a guy that I would hope would have a chip on his shoulder.
For sure.
I hope would be seriously ticked off. I went in the third round. I ate those guys lunch last year in college. Nassib, listen, he was highest rated on their board. The bottom line is they drafted him in hopes that he never sees the field because that means Eli's still playing. Okay. The guy that I like late in the draft is Eric Herman, the guard from Ohio. Liked him. I punched on tape guys against Penn State, and he was pretty darn good. So he doesn't back down from big competition. So late in the draft,
right.
I liked him a lot.
That's great. Hey, Charles, let me ask you something. You do some great work, and obviously we follow your work on Fox, and we follow your work on the NFL Network. From your perspective, What is the difference? I mean, where does your passion lie? Because you can hear it in your voice that you're passionate about football. You know, even if it's at the Pop Warner level. But in terms of professionally, you know, and I want you to tell people about your site also, because we've been at your site, charlesdavissports.com. But tell us about your passions and what's the difference for you as a you know professional sportscaster when you do college versus when you do NFL.
My passion is football, as you said. I've done games all along the line. I've literally done Pop Warner games all the way up through.
Wow.
Prepared like, you know, and that's just the way it is. It's football, and it's the passion. I love both the college and the pro games. Here's the difference, okay? The college game is the coach's game. The pro game is the player's game. Do we venerate great coaches in the pros? Yes. So when we call a pro game, and I think you guys know this and have noticed it all through the years, in a college, we probably refer to the coach more than we refer to the players.
Definitely.
In the NFL game, we refer to the players more than we refer to the coach.
Sure.
It's just a different, it's a different mindset. It's a different style. The players make the plays, and they're the ones who keep the coaches employed. In college, the coach makes all the ultimate decisions about whether you play or don't play. Look at how many times we've seen a guy benched in college flourish in the pros. Because college coaches
definitely
get away with that. Pro coaches do that, and guess what? They're fired. You got to get past the petty stuff. You may not like a guy in the pros, but if he's going to help you win, you don't even have to speak to him. Just make sure he plays on Sunday. In college, it's going to be a different mindset.
So,
you know what I mean? You guys understand what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. So speaking of which, how do you think that Chip Kelly's going to do in Philadelphia and Marone is going to do in Buffalo?
I like. Start with Chip. I think that Chip is going to be. The general consensus on Chip is that they framed what they think he's going to be, and I think that he's going to fool us all. You know, we've seen what he's done at Oregon, and we said, okay, that's what he's going to run in the pros. I don't think that's the case at all. Chip is going to run based on personnel, and that will dictate what he runs offensively. Will he try and go up tempo? Will he try and run faster than others? Of course he will. But he can't do it full-time in the NFL. You can't practice. To run that offense, you have to practice it full-time. And you can't practice full-time with a roster of 46 or 53 counting your practice squad guys because you wear them out. My easy analogy, remember when Paul Westhead came out of Loyola Marymount in basketball?
Oh, sure.
And remember run the shot every 7 seconds? All right, you guys remember when he went to the Denver Nuggets?
Yep.
And he had them, you know, in the swimming pool, the life vest, trying to get, you know, superior conditioning, and we're going to run these guys. The devil's going to press. About 10 games into the NBA season, they looked at him on the sideline and said, "Coach, you must be insane."
You're so right about that. And you know what? Since you are such an expert on both sides, I got to go in your wheelhouse, Charles, and ask you, what do you think about two of your studs? Patterson and Hunter with the Vikings and with Tennessee. How do you think they're going to do as receivers?
Patterson is more gifted in terms of physical dimensions. 6'3", 216, runs the low 4.4s, explosive, dynamic. Raw in route running. Remember, he's only 1 year at Tennessee. He was the JUCO guy before that. But every time he touched it, he was a big play waiting to happen. Remember last year, he returned a kickoff, a punt, ran the ball, and caught a pass for a touchdown. I mean, this guy is a machine that way. Would not surprise me if Justin Hunter has a better overall career. Hunter's still building up his body a little bit. Remember, he had the knee injury 2 years ago and had a little bit of the yips last year with his hands, but I think that's coming back to him. But a much more polished route runner, strong, strong character kid, and a much better athlete. See, next to Patterson, Patterson is so explosive and dynamic that you forget how smooth and good an athlete Hunter is. Hunter was a triple jumper, high jumper for the track squad. So he's got all that going for him. I think they're both going to be successful. I think Hunter is going to have a better career, if you can believe that.
Wow. That's great. So let's shift back to college for a sec. Who are the FCS teams that we need to look out for next year, especially anybody that's under the radar screen?
You know, I keep an eye on Clemson out of the ACC. They got their quarterback Taj Boyd back. Sammy Watkins, the wide receiver who was so sensational as a freshman.
He's a stud.
And then he got, right? And you remember he got involved with some bad stuff that offseason, cost him some games. It just never got in sync, right? You know, when you're suspended for, you know, smoking marijuana and missed the first couple of games, you don't quite get it back. Well, guess what? They get a full season back out of him this year. And he's got something to prove because, you know, kids these days, their third year in school, what are they thinking? I'd love to have a big year and go to the NFL. It's just that's the way they work. Well, he and Boyd, I think Boyd's as good a quarterback as they're going to be in the nation next year. He is terrific. I really think that they've got a chance to not just challenge for the ACC, but challenge for big honors. Remember last year they lost to Florida State early, at Florida State in a tough one, and then they ended up winning 8 out of the last 9. Remember who they beat in the bowl game? LSU, the same
yep.
LSU team who had eight kids drafted off of that defense this year. And how did they win it? Last-minute drive, Taj Boyd leading the team. Now, of course, you had DeAndre Hopkins, who made a big fourth-down catch.
Great pick by the Texans.
I think it's great super. And look, Andre Johnson, if he were on right now, he'd be high-fiving all of us, wouldn't he?
they've been looking for that number two receiver for a long time.
I had this feeling during the draft when it came turn for the Texans to draft. Didn't you have a picture in your head that Andre Johnson was in the draft room with Rick Smith, the GM, and Gary Kubiak, the head coach, like, I dare you to take something other than a receiver right now. I dare you.
Basically. Definitely. Hey, Charles, I got to ask you about, we're talking, you know, just a little bit, you know, we talked about some people, some issues off the field a little bit. But coming to Arizona, how do you think Tyrann Mathieu is going to do? And just the way that B.A. has drafted, I like what the Cardinals are doing. And maybe Carson Palmer could sort of get Larry Fitzgerald going again back to the Pro Bowl as a starter where he belongs.
Yeah, Larry needs Carson to play up to that capability because otherwise you're wasting Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, let's face it, the three of us could have probably thrown passes last year for the Cardinals. That's how rough it was for them. You know, and I don't mean that to be a total jerk to the guys because, look, I like those guys. Brian Hoyer is one of my favorite people in the world. But that's not going to get Larry Fitzgerald maximum, right? I mean, you've got to have someone to fling it and put it there. Carson has that ability. Their biggest thing is they have to protect him, and Bruce understood that. That's why Jonathan Cooper goes in the first round. You know, they come back later on and get Earl Watford, who's an underrated guard from James Madison. Stephon Taylor from Stanford is never going to run past you. But it's the best description I've got for him. He's probably he ran 4.64 at the combine, okay? Stephon Taylor will run 4.64 in the first quarter, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. No let up, no let down. You know how guys kind of fade as the game goes on? He doesn't, which makes him look
he gets stronger.
Stronger.
And that's
stronger
what Coach Shaw said when he was on our show. He loves them. Him and Ertz, those are his guys.
And
you know?
I love him. And Taylor will also do what? He'll pass protect, which will help keep Carson upright. I thought Taylor was the best pass protecting running back in the draft coming out this year. Ryan Swope is underrated to me. He's a high school running back who, when you watch him catch the football, he turns into that running back again. I mean, he ran like 4.34 at the combine, guys.
Yeah.
And they end up getting him in the sixth round. So Andre Ellington went way lower than we thought, another running back. So the competition running back now is intense again, and it's good because the Cardinals desperately needed that. To go from Beanie Wells saying, I'm going to audition for teams in the last game, and Ken Whitten saying, no, you're not, and bench him.
And they got my Mendenhall from the Steelers. Charles, listen.
They're loaded at running back. I mean, who are you going to keep? How are you going to play them? Bruce is a master at that. He's used to it. And, you know, he obviously knows Mendenhall from his time with the Steelers. Minter, the linebacker, I think is a really good pick in the second round. But going back to Mathieu, the only thing I would say is when I heard them say they're going to play him at safety, I have a
too
little
small.
Pause at that.
It's a little small, yeah.
I asked one of our researchers to punch up the small safeties who are productive in the league. And you know what I came up with? All of them might have been short in height, but they're all 200 or more pounds.
Right, like Bob Sanders.
They're all rock.
Right, and if he puts
on
10, 15 pounds, he won't be the same kind of playmaker and ball hawk.
Now,
so what do you see him as, a fifth, like a nickel, like stick in the slot?
I see him as a nickel. I see him as a nickel slot guy where you can blitz him. He can be like a Charles Woodson in a sense because you don't know if he's going to cover or come after the quarterback. He's a very instinctive player. He's instinctive like Troy Polamalu is, where he will make plays that – did not necessarily talk about on the defensive game plan. You know what I mean? Like, he will have an instinct.
Yeah.
He will have a feel. He's a smart football player. And there'll be times when he'll just like, oh, that's wide open. I'm going. Even though he's supposed to be doing something else, and nine times out of ten, he'll turn it into a big play. The reason I say safety, I shudder, is what you said. Can his body hold up to the hit? Bob Sanders' bullet, Bob was a rock, and his body couldn't hold it. He's 200 something.
That's right.
It's just too many.
He got hurt every year.
Downhill.
Right around the same time.
You know,
it, yeah.
Same time. You know, and it's a hard one to do. But if you punch an LSU film from Matthew 2 years ago, you will find in certain situations he did play safety. So it's not like he can't do it. And a lot of times he has a safety skill set in anticipation of ball skills. But I don't see him playing it as a steady diet. I think they'll move him all around.
Hey, Charles, we've got our phone lines backing up. Is it okay to take one caller?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we got a caller. Caller, you're on the air with Charles Davis.
Hey, Charles, thanks a lot for going on the show. My name is Hank. I'm old friends with these guys, so I always call in and heckle them from time to time. one quick question, because we're all like, you know, we're all crazy NFL fans, and we try to follow drafts. And just so you know, I'm sort of like I'm a frustrated Miami Dolphins fan, so you'll see how my question leads towards that. From translating from college and how you evaluate players from college and how they actually do in the NFL, with the exception of quarterbacks, so leave quarterbacks out of it, what do you think are the easiest positions to translate into the NFL and the hardest positions to translate?
I think hardest, and we're leaving quarterback out, I think receiver is very difficult because you're doing a lot of reading along with your quarterback. And if you do the wrong read, it turns into an interception. You know, you zig in and he expects you to zig out. That simple.
Right.
I think that's very difficult. I think that easier positions to play, running back, save for pass protection, because what do? We hand you the ball and you run it. I think
right.
That should be a pretty easy transition. That's not that difficult. I think linemen can be problematic at times, but overall, you should be able to adapt. Go in there and block the guy opposite you. Now, I know it's too simplistic to say that, but that's tough. I think the defensive back is difficult because your skill set might have to change. In college, you probably got away with just being better gifted athletically as a corner. And in the NFL, those guys you're covering are as athletically gifted as you are, so your technique has to get better. And a lot of times your technique fails you a little bit early because you didn't have to have it in college. So I think that's a difficult transition position to me. And last but not least, linebacker, especially outside linebacker, teams have gotten very smart about not putting too much on them and just having what we call a plan for them. I.e. Alden Smith with San Francisco.
Go get the quarterback.
First year. Yeah, third down pass rusher, nickel pass rusher. He sets a rookie sack record, and then the next year they gave him more on his plate and became a full-time guy. You know? So that's what I'm looking for with Lyle, like a Kiki Mingo this year with Cleveland.
Right.
I think Ray Horton will do something similar with him until he fully gets indoctrinated.
And do you think that that's what's going to happen with Deion Jordan in Miami? Because, I mean, we traded up for him.
Yeah, no
okay.
Doubt. I'm with you totally on mom. We are in the same hymnal, okay? You pick the tune. We'll sing it together because I think Deion Jordan. See, I don't see him as a down defensive end. I see him as an outside linebacker, and I know they've listed him as a down defensive end, but he's 248 pounds with like 6% body fat. So I'm trying to figure out where he's going to put the weight on to be a full-time
right.
guy on the defensive front. There aren't many Dwight Freeneys and Robert Matheses who do that. And remember, they played on a Colts team that was built to do what? Play with a lead.
Yeah.
Where now the run game doesn't hurt you as much. And against my, you know, for Miami, they're not built that way yet. But they needed another pass rusher opposite Cameron Wake. And that's why it was a surprise when it happened, because I think that was the first surprise of the draft. When Miami traded up to 3, I think we all thought they were going to get Lane Johnson.
Exactly.
From Oklahoma. That's what we all thought. And then they announced Deion Jordan. The room was like, whoa, there's our first surprise of the night. But it makes sense because Cameron Wake needs a running mate. Deion Jordan can be that guy. I see where they're going with it. Plus, don't forget, they filled a lot of different holes in free agency. The only one that you're really worried about now, to me, is left tackle. because they didn't address that. So just you like Jonathan Martin, or are you saying we still believe we can go get Brandon Albert? So we'll see.
I think it's going to be Eric Winston.
And if Winston comes and he's playing right tackle, that means you're definitely going Jonathan Martin at left tackle. But you want to hear the wild card? What about the kid you drafted at Tennessee, Dallas Thomas? I think he's a guard more than a tackle, but at Tennessee, he played tackle and guard. So he may very well show the skill set that allows you to compete, have him compete at left tackle. And I'm saying all this if Brandon Albert is not a reality in Miami, and I'm not sure that it's not still going to happen.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, how long can these go on?
Listen, they can go on for long. As we all know, they can go on as long as the rules permit it. And then a guy can get traded, and he'll be starting in your lineup the very next week. So I don't think it's dead yet. I don't think that it's not on life support as far as I'm concerned, because I think that that's the one hole in Miami, because I thought they did almost everything else brilliantly in the offseason.
Yeah.
But that's the one. You're either telling them that Jonathan Martin is your guy, or you're still going and getting that left tackle. Because I don't see any other thing. Because Eric Winston's a right tackle. He's not a left tackle.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Thanks for calling, Hank.
All right. Thanks, Hank.
Hey, thanks for chatting.
Hey, Charles, I really want to find out about your website and, you know, just let our audience how they can get there. And, of course, before I let you go, you know I'm a diehard Steelers fan, so I'll have to follow up with the Steelers. But tell everybody about, you know, your website and your Twitter, because people love you and Mike Mayock and NFL Network, but I just love the fact that, you know, we see you on Saturdays and you cover Saturdays and Sundays. So tell us about CharlesDavisSports.com.
Yeah, just a quick bit. I went to your site. I felt like I was 18 again. You had this video about, you know, for college prospects going out there and looking for colleges and picking colleges. I thought that was very helpful, and I thought that was very – it's almost like a personal PSA. I thought it was great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and thanks for pointing it out. Yes, CharlesDavisSports.com. I need to do a better job of updating things and making sure there's more material on there, but try and just get messages out to people. And what's been fun for me is that people can send messages back to me, and I have a chance to respond to them. And some of the things I've gotten have been a lot of fun. I mean, there's a father who contacted me about his son. Turns out he's from my hometown, because you guys are New York guys. I'm from New Paltz, New York.
And it turned out
the kid was from my hometown, and dad needed advice about college and what have you, and the kid's got a scholarship and playing college football. So it's a lot of fun to be able to interact that way and do things. So now turning forward, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I love Jarvis Jones.
Should have been a top five, top ten guy, right?
Yeah.
When he had his bad pro day and ran 4.95 and vertical 30 inches and everybody went, oh, my God. The Georgia strength coaches told us all last year, guys, he's not going to test as well as he plays. He's just not that kind of person. And we didn't really believe it. Because when you watch him on tape, he looks like he runs 4.6.
Yep.
And I think this is a typical great pick for the Steelers. A guy sells, and he fits their system. And I think Dick LeBeau have him ready to go. And he has something to prove, too, but he went to the perfect place to go prove it. And I think that's a great one. I think Le'Veon Bell from Michigan State will be the bell cow running back right from the beginning. The only thing I worry about is, as a Michigan State running back, he has a high odometer. He had 383 carries just last year.
Yeah.
Those guys get the ball a lot. But I'm telling you, he can catch it better than what you would think. I love the way he runs it with physicality. And he dropped his weight for the combine to try and run faster. My advice to him, put the weight back on and break tackles. Because what little bit he gained in speed was minuscule, guys. He'll still run about the same time if he puts on those 10 to 15 pounds and gets stronger and just becomes more physical. Marcus Wheaton's one of my favorite unknown receivers at Oregon State. You know, you hear about DeAnthony Thomas, the wide receiver scat back from Oregon. You know, it's about how quick and fast he is.
Exactly.
Marcus
He's sort of hit like him.
Wheaton beat him head-to-head in a Pac-12 track meet.
Wow.
Just straight up.
I love to hear that.
So Marcus Wheaton can run, folks, and be ready for him. Shamarco Thomas, a good, tough, hard-nosed safety. Exactly what the Steelers are looking for, because Troy's been dinged a lot. You know?
Yeah, and Clark is getting older as well.
You know? At that time, so that's exactly what you're looking for. Landry Jones as a quarterback gives you a chance to develop a little bit of depth. I think he's steady. I don't think he'll ever be spectacular, but he'll be steady.
That's like a giant situation where they hope he never plays.
Exactly. You hope he never plays. But they had to do something because the backup now is Gradkowski.
And we might even bring back Brian Hoyer because, you know, he had a cup of coffee with us before. And Charlie Batch is going to retire.
Gives you a chance to do that. And two other guys I'll mention. Terry Hawthorne, the corner from Illinois. Talent better than production. Hopefully the light can come on for him. He had a tough time against Quentin Patton from Louisiana Tech last year. I watched that tape and it was tough. Quentin Patton ate him alive. But Hawthorne is very talented. If you get past that, and a guy who is a perfect Steelers pick is Vince Williams, the linebacker out of Florida State. Every big hit we heard at the Senior Bowl usually had Vince Williams attached to it.
That's awesome. With Larry Foote being where he is in his career,
Vince Williams fits perfectly.
Yeah, and we need Woodley to come back and have a strong year, Charles. We really do.
I think he will. Yeah. I think that he is so tired of hearing, at least he should be,
Mar
Woodley wasn't in shape last year, didn't have the year he was supposed to. And see, I think for Pittsburgh, everybody's worried about the draft. They're worried about guys they lost. There's a term I use when I look for a book around my house, you know, when I don't want to go to the store and buy another book. I shop at home. What books are on my shelf that I haven't read yet? Well, guess what? Jason World is shopping at home, outside linebacker. He's got a chance to jump in there. Woodley, just by being back to being Woodley, is shopping at home. Ziggy Hood, continuing to make improvements. That's shopping at home. They've got guys that have been around for them that haven't stepped up into the roles they've needed to or that they thought they would or haven't had a chance to because other people were ahead of them. Here's their opportunity. So shopping at home for the Steelers now gives a little bit different meaning for people. And the offensive line, flip it over to the other side. You got the All-Pro in Pouncey, but you got the two young tackles. You got the kid out of Florida, all right, on the right side. You got Adams at Ohio State on the left side. They're just second-year guys. They should get better. Things should get better for the Steelers. And everybody's going to write them off and say, God, they're behind Cincinnati now. They're behind Baltimore.
I think we're going to be good this year. I think they're going to be fine.
I really do. Keep the
Castro.
And healthy, of course. You know, so, look, DeCastro is an extra draft pick. Guys, DeCastro is an extra draft pick. You know why? How many plays did he play last year?
Yeah, right. Four, right? Zero. Four games. He's coming off the injury. He's ready.
He's another number one draft pick that we don't account for this year.
You're right. And Coach Shaw said he was there at Stanford training with them. And he said he thinks he's going to come back strong and have a big year.
I think that he will. Barring injury, he would have had that year last year. Now you get him 1 year later, and it's a draft pick you didn't have to spend this year to get it. So I think that's a bonus, kind of a bonus pick for the Steelers that we will never put on paper.
Oh, that sounds great. Last but not least, Charles, Ray's Cowboys.
Ray is
one of those. Oh my God, we both love the Jets as our second team, but Ray is Roger Staubach, just like
70s.
I'm Terry Bradshaw.
We grew
so
up in the 70s.
What was Jerry doing? What was Jerry doing?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
That's a great question for all of us because I think we liked the player. We just didn't like the spot.
Yeah.
See, I like Travis Frederick. I think he's a good football player. I think you could have had him later. I don't think that you had to pull the trigger and take him at 31. Now, if they're that sold on him, so be it. That's kind of how drafting has gone now. People are like, look, I don't want to mess around. That's the guy I want. Take him. So I like that one. Escobar, the tight end, I know they're – playing for the future with Witten, but at the same time, I think they could have gotten him later too. So
basically,
it's two picks of good players, but I'm not sure they had to pull the trigger right then and there. They could have done a little something else.
Yeah,
the guy that I'm really intrigued by is Terrence Williams. He's the one that intrigues me because going into the draft process, I thought he was going to push to be a first rounder. I mean, size, speed ratio. He's caught a million balls at Baylor. A little bit different in the route running because, that spread stuff at Baylor is pretty much find an open spot and get open and we'll throw it to you as opposed to precise route running. But if he grows up a little bit, and I think that he can be a big-time player for them and really help out Dez and, and if you can keep the young man healthy, who what's his name?
Miles Austin.
Miles Austin. And RG3 wanted him in Washington. That tells you all you need to know about the kid.
Of course he did.
Yeah, that was the guy.
Of course he did. That's a big, strong receiver who can run. And that's a guy that he counts on. And then I think the defensive backs they got in the third and fourth round are good
like
players.
Wilcox.
Wilcox is only one year safety, guys. He was a running back, wide receiver, kick returner prior. So his ceiling is high. And I know his college coach very well, and he swears by him, so I'm going to take his word for it. And B.W. Webb, the corner from William & Mary, played very well at the Senior Bowl. Was not overwhelmed by the big schools. Did a really nice job. And Joseph Randall is DeMarco Murray minus the speed.
Mm.
He does a lot of the same things DeMarco does. Similar styles, pass protect, catch the football, run it inside, run it outside. But he's not as fast as DeMarco. But he's one of my favorite underrated running backs.
Well, depth of running back can't be you can't have too much depth, so why not?
Never can, not in that league. Two running backs take too many hits.
Yeah, especially in the NFC East, you know, a lot of these close games, some heavy hitting in the NFC East. Yeah.
Craig. Charles, thank you so much. This has been more than fun, and you're welcome anytime, and we'd love to pick your brain as we enter the college football season, you know, late August before you get way too busy, because I know you're swamped.
That sounds great, guys. Give me a buzz, and we'll do it.
All right. Thank you so much, Charles. It's been our pleasure.
Hey, thanks again for your understanding. It's been my pleasure, too. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Take care, Charles.
Talk to you soon.
Hey, you guys be good. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Oh, man. Awesome. Ray and Tay today, joined by Charles Davis from NFL Network and Fox Sports. That's how you do it. That's how you talk football. And just amazing, you know? What a wealth of knowledge.
All the teams, you know?
Yeah, he broke it down for us.
Team's draft and breaking it down. Wow, the guy knows his stuff. And you know, what's great about him is that he really sits on the cusp of college and the pros. So he knows, obviously he knows the college game, but he also knows the pro game. So he's able to really take you all the way through. There are some people that are college guys who try to follow a few players into the pros or vice versa. They really wake up to the players once they've been drafted and they hit their mini camps. But Charles takes you through both, you know, the 2, 3, 4 years you spend in college and then obviously the NFL. So he's perfect for the NFL fan and the college fan and just the football enthusiast. We should bring him out to some Pop Warner games. He'll break it down for us. We'll sit on the sideline, pull out our notebooks, and we'll analyze.
Totally awesome, man. Well, listen, let's get right into it as the show is wrapping down. Look, Miami did it. Chicago played great. Nate Robinson, Ray, has just earned himself one of the biggest contracts. The way he played was so awesome. Kudos to him. But LeBron and then Dwayne Wade in the fourth quarter, way too much. Obviously, Miami is going to be, you know, just waiting for the Pacer Nick winner. What did you think about how that series ended up?
You know, we said it. Basically, it was the best and the worst thing to happen to Miami to lose that first game, because they got slapped in the face and they got a wake-up call. They got their smelling salts, and it became obvious that the better team by far was Miami. It's just that Chicago caught them napping a little bit with the eight-day rest, and then once Chicago lost Dang for the series, you really can't compete without Dang. Against the best team in the NBA, you can't compete with a not 100% Noah and not having Dang, not having Rose, not having Heinrich. So it went, you know, Chicago put up a valiant effort, but at the end of the day, the better team won, and Miami's just waiting to blow through the Indiana Knicks winner and go to the finals.
Yeah, and I thought over on the other side, Memphis, that was incredible. You feel so bad for Durant. You know, he got tired, you know, shot poorly last night, 5 for 23 or 25. You know, he had a rough game. But I think Zach Conley, Gasol, and Tayshaun Prince with the dunk, Ray, I was like, is that young Tay-Tay from Detroit or Kentucky? I mean, the way he played, it was awesome. And I got to say, it looks like they both get the rest. It looks like Miami and Memphis might meet up in the NBA Finals. I put that out there on Twitter, and I really could see it.
Yeah, you know, we kept going back and forth with Miami and Rudy Gay and if Miami has enough to advance. Now, granted, they got two huge breaks in Blake Griffin going down, although they probably would have won that series regardless, I think, against the Clippers. Just in retrospect, I picked the Clippers to win, so I thought the Clippers would win that series. But you know, having watched those six games, I think they would have won regardless. But they caught a huge break in Blake Griffin getting hurt and obviously Russell Westbrook getting hurt. So this series looks totally different with Russell Westbrook. I don't know that they don't win the series, but certainly go seven. I mean, it goes down to a game seven, and then potentially they would win. But it would be so different with Russell Westbrook in the game. So in some ways they caught a couple of breaks, but Memphis looks about as good as you can look right now. You know, they're a team that's known for their defense. They got three guys that are on the first two team all defensive teams, and they've got a ton of just playoff basketball. So the opposite of that, we'll go to the Eastern Conference, is the Knicks. And the Knicks, you know, are not really built for the playoffs. I mean, they won a series, but at the end of the day against, you know, a Celtic team that was really banged up and getting long in the tooth. But the Knicks, you know, the Knicks-Indiana series, the Knicks are not really built for the playoffs, it turns out, especially not against a big, grizzled, you know, Indiana Pacers team. So Knicks are down 3-1, and Knicks are having trouble with finding their offense and executing in, you know, in the second round of the playoffs.
I think Jason Kidd playing 16 minutes, Ray, was too much, because when you have Kidd, Martin and Chandler all scored 0 points. It's ridiculous. You got to get Copeland in there. You got to let Prigioni play a little bit. He played 3 minutes, almost 4 minutes, and he can shoot. But then also Novak, he comes in, he plays 1 minute, but he hits a three. So I think tonight they're at home. But you know what? They got to play Copeland. They've got to do some different things. And you could take Kidd 16 minutes, put it down to 3 or 4, and give some of those to Copeland and Novak. I think the Knicks have got to try everything. Woodson has got to be more flexible with his bench tonight. And I think the Knicks will win and beat the Pacers. But let me tell you something. It's share the ball and rebound. The guards, everybody's got to go to the boards because that's what the Pacers do. Look at Stevenson. George Hill gets 26, like his career-high game against us. And, you know, we're not – Felton's not trying to stop him. I mean, we're not boxing out. It's ridiculous. It's just – it's very frustrating as a Knicks fan. But I do think we could pull it out tonight.
You like the Knicks tonight?
I do like it tonight, just for heart. I think Melo, if he has to, he'll score 40, but I think JR at home, you know, look, his shot started to hit finally in the fourth quarter, and I think that will lead us in. You know, maybe Amari's got to play 15, 20 minutes. We got to do something. I did like the fact that we start the big lineup, but it doesn't make a difference, right, if you have the big lineup, if nobody goes and gets the rebounds. They killed us on the offensive glass. We got out-rebounded, what was it, 50 to 38 or something like that, or 36? That's too much.
Bad matchup.
It's too much. And then Steph Curry tonight. What are you thinking? Does the ankle hold up for the Warriors so that Golden State can push this to a game seven?
I want to say yes because I want a game seven just basketball-wise. And I thought that the Spurs came out and looked good on their home court. I have a sneaky feeling that Popovich, Parker, Kawhi Leonard, maybe even you get some from Tim Duncan and Boris Diaw up front. I think San Antonio is going to close them out tonight. I just think that, you know,
really?
That's the problem with these jump shooting teams, right? Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, and even now Harrison Barnes. I think you got Harrison Barnes' two or three best games already, and the question is, can he put up another 25? I'm not sure. And then those other two, look, if they're shooting, they could win by 20. The Warriors.
Right, and you sort of need Curry and Thompson to have a good game together at the same time. No taking turns. They're both at home. And, you know, the key is tonight, I think it's the veterans. I think it's Landry. I think it's Bogut's on the board. And I think it's Jarrett Jack.
Who, by the way, has also been playing excellent basketball. You talk about little Nate Robinson getting himself a new contract. I don't know what Jared Jack's situation is. I think he's
no. He just signed for a couple of years with the Warriors,
right?
So.
But he's definitely proving to be a very, very solid, you know, bench, you know, guard off the bench. He can come in and play the one, you know, with Steph Curry, they can both kind of score. They score in different ways, obviously, and then he can play a pure one with Klay Thompson. So he's a nice little pickup addition to that team. So I actually think San Antonio wins tonight, but I wouldn't be surprised, like I said, if Golden State wins by 20. That's those jump shooting teams. You can't tell with those teams what's going to happen. Now at home with the crowd, they could blow San Antonio out of the building.
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things where we're going to have to see. I think for the Spurs, the key is going to be Leonard, Parker's penetration, and Green. You know you're going to get solid from Duncan and Ginobili. But if Green and Leonard could both get you sort of double figures, then it's probably a good night for the Warriors. I'd like to see it go seven. I think the Knicks – listen, the Pacers are not offensive juggernauts. The Knicks can get on a roll. If they get hot scoring again, Ray, and share the ball, there's no reason the Knicks can't win this. Then Saturday against the Pacers, and then Monday – you know, we're you know, might be talking to Ian Bagley, but if there's a game seven, we probably won't, and we'll catch him afterwards. You know, we're kind of hoping there's a game seven back at MSG on Monday. It's going to be exciting. I'm hyped up. You know, real quick, they had the NBA draft combine today. I thought that was interesting, watching Shane Larkin and some of these guards do their thing. Obviously, just going around in baseball, Granderson's back. The Mets won today 5-2 over the Cardinals. Granderson's back with the Yankees, and that's a nice little trouble to have, right? They can now DH Hafner, or, you know, they go with Gardner, Wells, and Granderson. So New York sports are alive, right? The Rangers are winning.
David Price, they put the Rays put David Price on the DL. And the other pitcher we talked about, Roy Halladay, looks like he's going to start throwing in 6 to 8 weeks, so the Phillies may be able to get something out of him before the end of the year. So interesting stuff happening still in the world of sports. By the way, in the world of soccer, to all of our soccer fans, we've been neglecting soccer. We might have to throw a couple of shout-outs out there to soccer. But David Beckham says he's going to retire after this season with Paris Saint-Germain. So, you know, we've got some happenings all over the world of sports. But tonight, it's all about playoff basketball.
I'm hyped up. Let's go, Knicks.
Now, let me ask you a question. Nobody ever admits it, but who is a better matchup for Miami? Who does Miami want to win? And then on the other side, who, you know, in terms of the other series, if you
Memphis,
figure
yeah.
Memphis.
Well, Miami, I think quiet as kept, Miami wants the Knicks. Even though the Knicks beat them in the regular season, so do the Pacers. I think the Pacers are just too big, and Paul George can match up nice with LeBron. So the Miami probably wants the Knicks. And I think Memphis has beat San Antonio, and they know San Antonio. I got to believe they probably want the Warriors because, you know, San Antonio, you still got to go against Duncan and the veterans.
Well, Parker and Ginobili and all that experience, too.
Right. No, that's a hard one, you know, because the Warriors are so different.
The Grizzlies beat them 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking, man. Hey, listen, you know, before we end, we got a special little message. You know, we could ride this out real quick. We got 3 minutes left. This is only maybe 30-something seconds, but check this out. We got a special caller checked in.
All right, let's listen to the message.
Should, yeah, should be coming on. But, well, it seems like it's going to take forever. I don't know why. But I hope the Knicks tonight, man, for all the Knicks fans.
Just for basketball. You don't like to see series go down 4-1, right?
No, anything, you definitely don't want to see
4-2,
that.
4-2, for, you know, go to 7. Just as a basketball fan, you want to see more basketball.
I definitely do. And I hope for the Splash Brothers, right, Curry and Thompson, that they get something going tonight too, man.
How exciting is it to be a Golden State Warrior fan, right? Even if they lose, right? They lose 4-2. They weren't expected to do much this season. They end up being the 6th seed, pretty easily handled the 3 seed in Denver, who had won 56 games or so. And then they go out and give the Spurs all they can handle. They might even win the series, but let's say they don't. I mean, they should have won game one, right? You could argue they should be up 3-2. And they could easily say to themselves, hey, we could beat the Spurs and could be in the Western Conference Finals. And they're so young. And then if both can get healthy and if they can get
Ray. Here it is, Ray. Here it is. Ray and Tay today. We'll see you on Monday. Let's see if this queues up now.
All right, we had a great time. Thanks
yeah,
for listening.
Charles Davis was great. It was an awesome show. Hey, let's go Knicks. Let's do it. I don't know. It's not working. Keyboard is not working, but that's all right. Listen, Charles Davis broke down everything for us. Everybody check out the show at rayandtaytoday.com or, you know, also at blogtalk.com/rayandtaytoday. Charles Davis broke down the Jets, the Cardinals, the Giants, everybody, you know, the first round. It was a wealth of knowledge, so we appreciate it. And we'll catch you on Monday. Everybody have a great weekend.
Talking sports with friends.
Yeah, and listen, ladies, sorry, Ray is no longer available. Ray's getting hitched this weekend. Congratulations to Erica and Tal. The wedding of the century is this weekend. I'm very happy for you, my friend, my brother, and I'll see you soon.
All right, we'll see you on the other side.
Talking sports with friends. We're out.
See ya.